Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman. And this week, I have a very, very special guest on the podcast. Now, you may know him as the wonderful co-host of Condensed History Gems. You may know him as a historical fiction author of Silent Crossroads. You may know him as the author of so many of those wonderful 100 Facts books. But today I'm talking to the author of a brand new history book. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Jem DiDuccio.
Hello.
Hello, Jem. Now, Jem, you've written a new book. And from what I gather, you know, I've kind of, you know me, I've not really had a chance to look at it properly, but it's all about raisins. Is that right?
Oh, that is a terrible, terrible joke. And I respect that. Thank you very much. Greg. Yes.
Yes. For those people that didn't get the terrible, terrible joke, because I haven't mentioned the name of the book yet, the book is called The Sultans.
Yes. The full title is The Sultans, The Rise and Fall of the Ottoman Rulers and Their World, A 600-Year History. But yeah, The Sultans. Stick with The Sultans.
The Sultans, yeah. Now, what I would suggest is anyone that's rushing out to buy their copy right away, typing it straight in, is I would suggest, you know, if you're going onto Amazon or if you're going onto a bookshop, ask for The Sultans by Jem DiDuccio. You'll be all weak if you try and type that entire title out or even try and remember it. Now, Jem, The Sultans. First obvious question is why? Why this particular subject? I know you are a particular fan of this certainly this area of the world, but why the Sultans to cover?
Okay, so a question for you, Greg, and I apologize for putting you on the spot. I know you sort of read into it away. Did you actually really read the intro, like the first couple of pages setting it all up?
Yes, I really did, and there's various bits and pieces in there that I want to come back to a little bit later.
The reason why I say that is because in the intro, it actually, you know, I state there that I was kind of aghast at the general view of the Ottoman Empire. You know, I was talking to an actual historian who simply said, "I hate them. They destroyed Greek culture." And it's like, well, it isn't as simple as that, but he wanted to have no more conversation than that. And what I find interesting is in the modern-day Republic of Turkey, they've co-opted. The Ottoman Empire was not full of Turks, okay? But that's the way it's been remembered now in the Republic of Turkey. And pretty much everywhere else that used to be part of the Ottoman Empire, they basically sort of, it's almost like they whistle and stare up, look up into the air when you ask them, like, so what was it like under Ottoman rule? Like, oh, don't know what you're talking about. No, nothing to see here. Or you get this sort of visceral, they were the enemy, they were the bad guys, they killed people. And like any empire, it's more complicated than that. Now, I am half Turkish, okay? So I was brought up with various stories about the Ottoman Empire, indeed my family, which I weave into the sort of family stories into this book. So from my point of view, it was a chance to... There are very few Ottoman books about the entire Ottoman Empire. People tend to focus on certain things like the Siege of Constantinople in 1453 or the Battle of Gallipoli, World War I. So there are very few that cover all of it, and even fewer that aren't horrifically biased. So what I'm trying to show you is warts and all of this fascinating empire. And on top of all that, I consider it a kind of unofficial sequel to Deus Vult. The first two chapters of The Sultans does neatly overlap, and I even refer back to Deus Vult. So if you enjoyed my book about the Crusades and you kind of wanted to know what happened next, well, now you've got it.
Which I think the link to Deus Vult is really important because... This is one of those books that, for me, is what I class in my mind, and you can tell me how you feel about this. This is one of the books that I class in my mind. I would class this with Deus Vult under Jem's serious history books. Now, that's not to say...
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I don't want to make it sound like an academic history book because I enjoy the fact that, as you say in the introduction, you go into your this little bit about... You know how you've brought up this subject, and you get the same response. And it isn't a serious history book in the sense that you're going to sit there and read it. It's not a coffee table history book where you're just going to be getting some dry facts. This is I'm trying to say this without right, Jem, stop listening for a moment. this is a really entertaining history book as well. It is an entertaining history book, and it's really nicely written, but it's not like your short 100 facts book where it's a short bang bang bang. It is in depth, and it is a book that I'm going to be reading more than once, the same as I did with Deus Vault, just to start to get my head around it. You know, when you come to this book, you read it, and it's like when I read something, and I'm going to compare you now, and I hope you don't take this wrong. I'm going to compare you to Brian Cox, the physicist on TV.
I'll take that. I'll absolutely take that, and I'd also love his book sales as well.
Yes, wouldn't you? But it's that sort of style of popularizing history. It is serious. It is academic. I read it. I've read your book the same way that I read Brian Cox. I read it and I understand it and I follow it and I think it. And then I get to the end of the chapter and I wake up the next morning and I try and explain some of it to someone and I'm like, well, this happened. And then I'm like, no, I understood it while Jen was saying it. And so then the same with Deus Vault, I then have to go back because, and I think this is the crucial thing, because you've picked a part of history with which I am entirely unfamiliar. And I actually said to you before the podcast earlier that when you asked me to, you know, read your book on the Sultans, and I was a bit like, oh, Sultans, is this really, this is a subject I know nothing about whatsoever, really absolutely nothing about whatsoever. And I started to read the book and I was like, actually, this is really fascinating because it's something I know nothing about. But at the same time, not having any basis in the subject at all, I find that, you know, if I'm reading an English history book, I have things I can relate to in my mind. Whereas with this, every single character is a new character. Every name I hear is, you know, not entirely true. There are obviously names. There are places that I've heard of that you've brought up before that you've touched upon. But a lot of the names just are unfamiliar to me. And so it is that little bit... A little bit harder to get my head round and lock in place, and yet at the same time, I'm thinking, I ought to be reading more about this. This is actually a subject that is fascinating, and I ought to be going over to Turkey myself and going over to some of the places that you list, and I want to see this history. So, I hope that, you know, that's kind of the way you want this book to be seen. It is a more serious history book, and as such, it's not a pick up, skim through, you know whatever
forgotten history
happened to
type.
One of the presidents. Well, forgotten history type. Yeah, it's not forgotten history. It's, you know, but your president's 100 pack. You can pick that up. You can skim read one of the 100 facts. You can read through one of the 100 facts. Put that down. You've got a new fact that you can go and talk about for the day. This one you do have to. You have to sit down and have a good read of. And that's the thing. And the good thing about that is you want to sit down and have a good read of it. How does that all sound to you? Is that
thank
horribly
you very
offensive?
Much, but, so but your point there about, I call them anchor points. You know, whenever you're reading a history book, you need some anchor points to fix it onto something that you can relate to. And I'm well aware that if I'm talking about the Ottoman expansion into Syria, that's something that most people in the West know nothing about whatsoever. And the sort of clashes that this Sunni Muslim empire has with Shia Muslims. Again, it's like, oh, my head hurts. So, you know, people say I tend to have a light style, but also I do try and flip it back to areas that people can relate to. You know, when I talk about things like a German emperor turning up, it's like, oh, at least I know where Germany is. And Maximilian, that's a name I can pronounce properly. And I do sometimes use analogies. So I'm like, well, this is going on in Anatolia. This was what's going on in Britain. So I do occasionally try and sort of feed people some lines. It gets I would argue, kind of less exotic as it goes on, because they're spending far more, the Ottomans are spending far more time in Europe, and so I you know, most people have heard of countries like Hungary and Serbia, so they're, you know, they're going to be reading you know, about points of reference. But for me personally, and this is my admission, you know, I'm pretty good with my early Ottoman history, and pretty much everybody knows at least something about this great siege of Constantinople in 1453, and you know, and a few other bits, and also the end game as well. But I'll be honest with you, Greg, when I was doing the research for this book, I realized I knew precisely nothing about the Ottoman Empire from 1700 to 1800, apart from the bit right at the end with Napoleon. So I really had to do my research. And also, it's a period, that century is a period of decline. And I didn't want to skim over the sultans, but I think I certainly myself, and I don't know for other people, but when you're reading about stuff like, and then they're getting worse, and then they're getting poorer, and they still haven't got their act together, and oh, here comes another ineffective ruler, that isn't particularly interesting to read. So I do my best to try and keep the reader engaged, even when I'm telling you. As I said, this is a warts and all view. And I know that this book, if it was read by certain people, would offend them, because I'm not towing their national line on certain things. Because I'm, you know, as always in life, it's more complicated than that. And generally, national story arcs of certain events, when you dig deeper, there is more subtlety going on. And, you know, there are very, very rarely in history do you just get outright good guys and bad guys. And some of the comparisons people use to try and, again, these anchor points. Oh, this is just like blah in Europe. No, it really isn't just like blah in Europe. And I will now tell you what really happened, but again, without sort of sinking you into, because believe me, I could have killed you with the list of sort of pashas that were fighting, or grand viziers or viziers that were sort of the sultan's right-hand man. You know, I was desperately trying to avoid the detail that would have killed the narrative and would have switched you off.
That's why I say this doesn't end up as a coffee table book. This isn't a book you're going to want to, you know, sort of dip in and out of just to get the specific. This is a book to read. You sit there and you read it through. And actually, it's interesting because one of the sentences that I've jotted down here from the book that I wanted to bring up is that lovely moment where you say you will find the account of the siege of Constantinople about a quarter of the way through this book, because it happened about a quarter of the way through the timeline of the Ottoman Empire. And that sentence in itself, I think, is wonderfully gem in its way, because what you have been careful to do in this book is not to gloss over the beginning of the period. You've made sure that you do give each bit of the history its due, whereas, it again, I say it's very gem. You've decided to try and find some stuff that, even if you think you've read a lot of books about the sultans and the Ottoman Empire, I think you've tried to approach areas that aren't generally covered.
I think that's absolutely true. And as I said, you know, that it is weird looking at what's actually out there at the moment. You know, the reason why I haven't written a book about World War II is because I think there are excellent, excellent books out on World War II. The reason why I did write one about the Crusades is there was no high. Welcome to the Crusades. Here's an introduction from the very first Crusade to the very last Crusade, and not just concentrating on the first four, or just only concentrating on the Christians, or whatever. So, you know, I thought that there was a gap in the market to go for it, and it's the same thing here with the Sultans. As you know, early on in the book, I quite often open chapter names with myths, legends around the Ottomans, where I then recount the story, and I say how one of the things that people don't realize, everyone talks about the martial prowess of the Ottomans, they don't realize how much the Ottoman sort of culture loved a good story. So I will tell you the legend, and then I will tell you, pick it to pieces with history, which is also interesting as well. Do you remember some of those bits?
I do indeed. Yeah, I remember the tree coming from the navel and things like that. I remember certain, but yeah. And actually, it's that sort of thing where we're dealing with legends and we're dealing with everything else, and especially the early part of the book where you're dealing with stuff where you say yourself, the reason that first 150 years of the the Empire is not really covered in a lot of history books is because there's not a massive information out there. But what you do manage to do rather well is still show how, even when we lack information, it's important to know about some of this stuff, and still some of this is still important today. And one of my personal favourite bits of the book, where it links something we know very, very little about with its importance in the modern world, was when you started talking about Suleiman Shah.
Yes. So you have
that lovely line saying he drowned in 1227, and that's basically all we know about him, and then you carry on.
Yes, so for those of you who don't know, Suleiman Shah was an ancestor to the founder, Osman. Osman founded the Ottoman Empire, sometimes called Ottoman, which is where you get the word Ottoman from. But anyway, so Osman himself was not a big deal in his own lifetime. It's just his children and his children's children went on to grow an empire. But so Osman's barely known, so therefore his like great-granddad's even less well-known. But he was part of the Ottoman Empire, and therefore he was, this Suleiman Shah, who drowned in a river, was placed in a tomb, which is technically now in Syria. After the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, it's now in the wrong country, as it were. And yeah, so we had, just a couple of years ago, Turkey invading Syria, but everybody realized this wasn't a military exercise. It was to get that tomb and put it into Turkey, because ISIS had a habit of blowing up old things. And they might well have blown up this relic of another age. So you've got modern soldiers in a modern war against a modern enemy, putting their lives in danger. There was no fighting, because ISIS isn't dumb and wasn't about to fight against one of the world's largest armies that was immediately on their border. That was a political consideration in the last few years, in the age of the internet, because of something that happened in the 13th century.
Something that happened in the 13th century, and something that a lot of books may well have just left out. As you say, it's an ancestor, and there is so little information. A lot of books would probably just have left it out, because it's not the real interesting part where that comes into the modern day, and the way it links to today is not technically history in the sense of it doesn't actually deal with the historical figure. It deals with recent events and recent times, and I think that is what this book does quite well, is it does give a grounding of the modern day. And because you've mentioned them there, we have ISIS, we have all this trouble in that region of the world, a region of the world about which I think it's fair to say an awful lot of people in this country and around the world actually know very little about. As I say, I was a bit, I'm going to read this book, it's a subject I don't know anything about. Then I've been enjoying it, and the thing to me is, well, hold on, why don't I know anything about this subject? Because there are some fascinating stories that, and some of the stories, obviously, I'm sure people remember bits and pieces that you've brought up on the podcast. And, you have over the sort of nearly 3 years now that we've been doing this, 3 years we've been doing this, you do tend to go for stories from this sort of region, bring them up. And it is that sort of thing where I'm sitting there and thinking, well, hold on, this is fascinating. Why don't we know more about this history? And you've obviously written this book to try and address that and try and, again, popularise this particular bit of history. But why do you think that was necessary? Why is it that a really fascinating subject doesn't have a lot of books out at the moment?
Well, we kind of talked about this, that people only have a certain bandwidth for old information. And there's just clearly some real spikes of interest. You're going to find it fairly likely to, get greenlit to something like the Tudors, the Romans, the ancient Egyptians, World War II, at the moment, World War I. But, we mentioned in the past the English Civil War, very interesting, lots of social changes and military events happening, and yet that just doesn't tend to get much in the way of love from either books or documentaries or even TV series. And, you know, don't get me wrong, the Ottomans get a huge amount of coverage in sort of the Islamic world and particularly the Republic of Turkey. But even then, they tend to pick the cool bits rather than the very beginning because there isn't a lot of information there. And obviously, it's showing them to be very much the underdog, whereas Suleiman the Magnificent in all his power and awesomeness, that's kind of an easy thing to do. And actually, the biggest show ever in Turkey, which spread throughout the whole of the Middle East, was quite the phenomenon, was all about the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent and with his wife Roxolana, and it was kind of like the Game of Thrones, kind of like the sort of Tudor type thing, and just everybody sat there and watched it, but it's very much a stylized "ooh, aren't we awesome" period of history. Whereas they don't tend to write about, you don't get many documentaries about the 1700s because it's just always slowly going wrong in an embarrassing, depressing kind of way. And actually, you get that at the beginning of the book with the Byzantine Empire. I bet you had this sort of feeling when you were reading some of those early chapters that it's like, really? The Byzantines really cannot get their act together. Once again, they have an opportunity to... Oh, no, they mucked that up again. It's just a slow decline. And it's sort of like, can nobody stop this from happening? The answer is no, apparently. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And we're quickly running out of time, as we always do on this podcast. And there was one thing I wanted to ask you about. I'm going to... Leave the actual subject matter of this book aside for a minute, because I actually want to talk to Jem, the writer now, about the writing, because you have in the last few months released this book and Silent Crossroads, your first narrative book, your first historical fiction book. For you, presumably, were you writing these two books at the same time and then just holding off the release, or were they written one after another? Did you write them together? That's what I had to word. I can't remember the word. Yep.
Well, the answer is technically yes. The guts of Silent Crossroads was written 2.5 years ago. This time last year, I was heading towards the end of the guts of the Sultan's book. Now, what was happening, I guess, sort of at the same time, is there were little tweaks here and there with Silent Crossroads, but the main... You know, the main chewing through the Sultan's corrections and edits and all that kind of stuff happened after Silent Crossroads was definitely put to bed. Indeed, Sultan's could have come out at the end of 2017, but Amberley just had too many big books coming out then. They said, look, we want to give this a proper run-up. We want to give this sort of proper coverage and love and sort of some marketing oomph, so we will push it into January 2018. It's like, well, don't leave it too early in January because nobody's got any money then. So this is also why we're promoting it now on the podcast. So the book's already out and I guess has been for about a month, but you know, it's now out there. You may want to check it out. But you know, it's like right now I'm in the process of pitching for a history book, and you know, I've kind of presumed I'm going to get it, so you know, I've written the first 1,000 words of that, but I am actually also fiddling around with sort of another novel which I'm 10,000 words into, but that will definitely be put on hold if I have to sort of, you know, go for the history book, because the history books have firm deadlines which I have to hit, whereas, you know, the things that are self-published, I can leave them till whenever. But I just realized that I like to have a project. I didn't realize this about myself sort of 6-7 years ago, but I've now got into the routine where if I don't have a project on the go, I'm kind of a bit restless and I'm kind of casting around for the next idea. So Sultans I always had in mind, and pitching that to Amberley was not hard at all. They loved the idea. And they've even said, look, could you do something sort of similar about another topic? And I've actually turned them down and said, no, that's... I've now written everything I know about that era. That, you know, that's what this book is, and anything else either doesn't interest me or I don't know nearly enough about, you know, and it would take me forever to do all the research. So the Sultans, a bit like Deus Vult, and I guess a bit like lots of the books that I've done, is, you know, there is this core of, I already know this stuff, and then building on that core is the research that I have to do.
And... just when you talk about, you know, sort of this as being sort of a sequel to Deus Vult, have you now, and you can, you know, obviously refuse to answer if this is political negotiations with other books and stuff, but Are you now done really with the Ottomans and that area of history, or will we have a trilogy of books eventually around the same subject?
Well, the other thing that I have in mind is there are, for 1,000 years, there were these horsemen that came charging in from the east, and you know, they're separated by about 200 years each. The first lot that appeared in Europe were the Huns. Then shortly, it was a couple of hundred years after that, you have the Magyars, who were probably the least well known. Then the next lot didn't quite make it to Europe, and they're the Turks. And then a couple of hundred years later, you have the Mongols. And then, you know, a couple of hundred years after, and the very last one, you've got Tamerlane. And so actually, you've got 1,000 years of these different sort of different cultures that we end up calling very different things, but actually all come from sort of Central Asia, and were all nomadic horsemen who were very good with bows on the back of horses. And maybe I could do a book about that, because it pulls together all kinds of things that I kind of already know about, but you know, I probably already mentioned a few names where you're thinking, going, I know nothing about them or hardly anything about them. So naturally the Ottomans will get mentioned again, and Tamerlane does make an appearance in this book. I was so happy to do that, by the way. So I could do that, but then there's nowhere else I can go in these directions. And you see this with historians. And I found it interesting with Amberley that they're trying to pigeonhole me, even though I've done stuff on the American presidents or the Romans or, you know, the Crusades. These things don't really have much to do with each other, and, you know, not even happen in the same geographical area. But, you know, that they try and pigeonhole you, and you get somebody who, you know, more serious historians who clearly sort of lecture on a certain topic, and they write an amazing book. And they write a sequel, a follow-up book that's pretty darn good as well. And then by books 3 or 4, it's like, yeah, you've covered this. You've already done this. So it's now getting too specific or a bit too sort of, you know, wishy-washy. But we're clearly past your sweet spot, as it were. And, you know, I don't think I've got another 20 history books in me, but I still think I've got a few more to go.
I think that is the crucial thing, is that when I read this, I feel like you've put so many good stories in, and it's such an interesting book. If you were now to try and go further into the same subject, you would have to mine down and get really gritty and focused in, and I think, as you say, you've covered, you know, I assume you feel from what you said there that you've covered the bits that mainly interest you, the exciting bits, the bits, you know. If people want more information, presumably, you're saying, you know, if you find that particular half a page interesting, go and research yourself, go and write. You don't need to write a book about every single page in this one book.
Yeah. And actually, the last thing I'm going to finish on is, I would argue that the first half of it is just a romp. You've got an empire in its prime, you've got these great stories, you've got these people getting more and more powerful, and then you've got the inevitable decline. And actually, they almost sorted their act together at the beginning of the 20th century, but the unfortunate thing is, and I'm sorry to sort of end on a bit of a downer, but the bit of the book I ended up rewriting, oh, I don't know how many times, in an attempt to really tell it truthfully, but also be balanced, in my opinion, is the massacre of Armenians that happened in World War One. Now, some countries say that it's illegal to call it a genocide, and other countries make it illegal not to call it a genocide. So that's how contentious this is. But it's incredibly poorly explained. The Armenians, who are, you know, about 1.5 million Armenians died in World War One, the vast majority of them being civilians. You know, this is a horrific war crime. But the way they compare it to is it's basically what happened to the Jews in World War Two. It's like, no, it isn't. It's not even close. You had a standing army. You were in open rebellion. What the Ottomans did was absolutely wrong and despicable. But, you know, the Jews didn't have a chance to fight for themselves. Oh, and also, when the Armenians recaptured land and there were Turkish communities, Ottoman communities, Muslim communities in those areas, guess what? They were out for revenge. So, it's a horrific, you know, there can be no doubt that far more Armenians died than Ottomans, but it's a horrifically awkward, horrible period that the Turkish government just basically go, oh, yeah, that didn't really happen, basically. Hardly any of that happened. It's all exaggerated. And the Armenians perhaps go a bit too far the other way and claim that they were purely the victims and they didn't do anything wrong themselves. But, you know, that, you know, just because you fight does not excuse the massacre of civilians. So you can see, even just me sort of giving you the briefest bare bones summary, this is a uncomfortable subject to deal with. And after you get all the fun romps, it's like, why did this empire have to sort of self-immolate like this right at the end? Because it is a very serious topic. I really try my best to tell it like it is. And you can tell I'm struggling with it still now. I would hope that because it's a book, people will read it in context and see that I'm really trying to do a good job and I'm trying to show both sides of the situation. I think that if I was to serialize it on the internet, I'd just get hate, probably death threats as well. And I really hope that the listeners of this podcast see that I'm really trying to be open and honest about it. So that, I guess that's the bit I really wanted to say out there. That was easily the hardest bit of the book to write. And oh my goodness, how many times I rewrote it and got other people to read it and people to review it. That was hard. But it does end on some interesting notes. I do finish just after the end of the Empire to sort of say, and this is what the legacy was, the initial legacy. So, you know, give it a go. It's not often do you get a book that covers 600 years and about 20 different countries. For value for money alone, it's worth a buy.
Okay, well, I'll do the plug now. I think you've already done it, really. But the big plug today. So the book is called The Sultans, A 600-Year History of the Ottoman Rulers and Their World by Cem Dedeucu. As we mentioned before, you know, supporting creators. If you go and get a copy of this book and you read it and you enjoy it, which I'm sure you will if you get a copy, then please go onto Amazon, leave a little review for Cem. Give Cem a little bit of extra help. If you get the chance, then go to one of those old-fashioned things that you get outside, they're called shops, and go in and order a copy in an actual bricks-and-mortar bookshop, because that way, that shop, you know, very often, if they're going to order a copy of a book in for you, they're going to order a couple of copies in case someone else buys it. That lets more people get to see the book as well, puts it through the bookshops. But what I want people to do, if you get a copy of this book, go online, go to Amazon, go to a bookshop, get a copy of The Sultan's 600 Years History of the Ottoman Rulers and Their World by Cem Dedeucu. Now, a few weeks ago, I asked you to send tweet at History Gems, tweet Cem, fill his timeline with photographs of Mott and Bailey castles. And what I'd like you to do over the next couple of weeks, what I'd like you to do over the next couple of weeks is I would like anyone that gets a copy of this book, gets the hard copy or a Kindle copy, what I want you to do is I want you to take a photograph of you with the book and I want you to absolutely spam at History Gems with just photographs of you all reading Cem's book. Because I know from working on my web series, I know what it takes, you know, and I know that Cem works a lot harder than I do in general. So I know the amount of time he's put into this book. So show Cem some support, get a copy of the book. And when you've got a copy of the book, take a little photograph of yourself, tweet at History Gems, show him the pictures of all the people around the world enjoying The Sultans, A 600-Year History of the Ottoman Rulers and Their World by Cem Dedeucu. And Cem, I think it only remains for me to thank my wonderful special guest for today, Mr. Cem Dedeucu.
And I'd like to thank my co-host and interviewer, Greg Chapman.
And that's all from us. Please, please, please go now, go now, go now and get your copy of The Sultans, A 600-Year History of the Ottoman Rulers and Their World by Cem Dedeucu. I think I've said the name enough times now. So all enjoy the book. It really is a fantastic book. Congratulations to Cem on his latest book release. And for now, goodbye and take care.